Up close, but not close enough for activists. The UN's human rights chief is accused of failing to press China on alleged atrocities during her six-day visit. Michelle Bachelet insists she wasn't there to investigate, and Beijing denies any wrongdoing. So, did the trip have any purpose? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Kim Vanell. Michelle Bachelet has been denounced by activists in her field after the first trip to China by a UN human rights chief in 17 years. Bachelet's tightly controlled visit took her to Xinjiang region, where the US has labelled the detention of Uyghur Muslims and other minorities as genocide. She admitted being unable to assess the scale of any human rights abuses, but said she discussed it with officials. China denies committing any crime, saying it set up training centres in Xinjiang, not detention camps.
This was not an investigation. Official visits by a high commissioner are by their nature high profile and simply not conducive to the kind of detailed, methodical, discrete work of an investigative nature. The visit was an opportunity to hold direct discussions with China's most senior leaders on human rights, to listen to each other, raise concerns, explore and pave the way for more regular, meaningful interactions in the future.
Well, Human Rights Watch Executive Director Kenneth Roth describes himself as proudly sanctioned by China's government. He posted his assessment of Bachelet's trip on Twitter. He said the UN rights chief seems to believe she is so persuasive that her quiet backroom conversation will convince Beijing to ease its repression. But Beijing will gladly talk privately until she is blue in the face. It will respond only to public pressure. China, though, says the trip delivered concrete results and dismissed criticism by those they say make up lies about Xinjiang under the guise of human rights.
In recent years, there's been a tendency of politicizing and instrumentalizing the UN Human Rights Council and other multilateral human rights institutions. China has made it very clear that some Western countries, while having no self-reflection on their own notorious misdeeds, yet driven by political motives, abuse multilateral human rights platforms to spread rumors and lies, using human rights to interfere in others' domestic affairs, and recklessly attacking and smearing others, turning multilateral human rights institutions into arenas of naming and shaming and block confrontation. These behaviors have gravely poisoned the atmosphere of the International Human Rights Corporation and must be taken seriously.
All right, let's bring in our guests. From Washington, D.C., Roshan Abbas, the Executive Director of Campaign for Uyghurs. In Beijing is Einar Tangen, a Senior International Fellow at the Taihe Institute who specializes in China affairs. And Sophie Richardson is the China Director at Human Rights Watch and joins us also from Washington. A very warm welcome to you all. Thank you for joining us here on Inside Story. I'd like to start with you, Roshan Abbas. Because as well as being the executive director of Campaign for Uyghurs, you also have family members who have gone missing or been detained, including your sister. I just want to start by asking you to tell us what happened to your sister. What do you know?
Thank you so much, Kim, for giving me this opportunity. In September 2018, I participated on a panel in one of the think tanks in Washington, D.C., the Hudson Institute, and I spoke against China's genocidal policies while outlining the fate of my in-laws, which my husband's entire family was missing, my parents' in-laws in their 70s, and three of my husband's sisters and their husbands, and a brother and his wife, and 14 of my husband's nieces and nephews, all went missing since the summer of 2017. But just 6 days after that panel, after I exposed China's genocidal policies, my own sister, Dr. Gulshan Abbas, she was taken by the Chinese government as retaliation for my advocacy. She's a medical doctor, retired medical doctor. She retired at an early age due to health reasons from practicing medicine. In 2 weeks from now, she will be 60 years old. But I have no idea where she's being held at. I don't know if she's still alive. Not only she's being taken as a hostage, as a retaliation for my activism abroad, but also she's being charged harshly. At the beginning, when I was vocal about my sister's case and raised her case in media, the Chinese state-owned media, the China Global Times Network, accused me for stealing someone else's photo and spreading lies about my missing sister. Then we learned on Christmas Day in 2020 that my sister, Dr. Gulshan Abbas, was sentenced to 20 years in prison on the terrorism-related charges.
I know there has
She's a kind, peaceful, non-political person.
There has been confirmation, I know, from Beijing about her detention. Thank you for sharing that with us. Sophie Richardson, I'd like to cross over to you just to give our viewers a sort of wider perspective on everything that's happening in Xinjiang. What do we actually know is happening there? What has been proven without a shadow of a doubt, the scale of what is happening in Xinjiang?
First, thanks for having me. Human Rights Watch has been documenting serious Chinese government human rights violations in that region since 1997. But in the last 5 years, we have had to focus on the authorities' misuse, its overreach of using the pretext of terrorism to arbitrarily detain upwards of a million people wholly outside of any sort of legal proceedings and purely on the basis of their ethnicity and their religion. We've documented torture, we've documented family separations, cultural persecution, enforced disappearances. And these do rise to the level of crimes against humanity. And it is imperative that the international human rights system, particularly in the form of UN human rights mechanisms, respond to this not as the UN High Commissioner has offered through a working group, but rather through an actual credible investigation with a view towards accountability proceedings. Let's be very clear that if any other government in the world was committing human rights abuses of this scope and this scale, we would be well underway with that project. But because the Chinese government has used its power in the international system and particularly within the UN, we're not any closer to Ruxian's sister being freed. And that's not right.
We will be talking about Michelle Bachelet's trip in a moment. But first, I'd like to cross over to Aina Tangen. So China says that these camps are re-education camps. What does that mean? What is the Chinese narrative here?
The Chinese narrative is that there were a series of incidences between basically Uyghurs attacking Hans. Not only in Xinjiang, there was an incident where a bunch of Han Chinese were slaughtered on a subway station down south by a group of Uyghur terrorists. And they decided that, you know, they needed to take things in order. What they decided was that, like in every other part of China, the Uyghurs needed to understand Chinese. They needed to be mainstreamed. They needed to have an education. Many families, they had multiple wives, multiple children, which was, you know, useful when you were in agriculture. But a lot of these areas, it doomed them to agriculture. And unfortunately, what happens is when you have a lot of children and there's only so much land, the ability to support those children goes down as you go down by generations. So there was this fear and that was founded in these kind of radical elements that were saying that they wanted an independent Xinjiang, that they were joining terrorist organizations and also struggles in the Middle East, that they did not want that in China. So they said education is the key, and we have to make sure that they speak Chinese so that they are portable. They are not, you know, restricted to Xinjiang where they can speak a local dialect. They really need to be mainstream. So this is what China thought was the answer.
Mr. Tangen, the international community, and it's been documented by various human rights groups, pretty obvious, according to all of those reports, that these are in fact not re-education camps, but there are some serious human rights abuses happening in those camps. And as we've heard, you know, people just disappearing, their families don't know where they are. So what has been China's response to that?
Well, you know, you mentioned that, Kim, that this has been established. Quite frankly, if you start looking at all the paperwork that's been put together, and I have no doubt that Human Rights Watch is collecting data from different sources. I certainly don't have people on the ground there. But, you know, it all comes back to this gentleman named Adrian Zenz, somebody who is thoroughly he's a born-again Christian. He believes, not a big fan of women's rights. He believes in corporal punishment. It's strange that he would adopt Muslims, as he believes under his own, you know, very extreme brand of Christianity, that they're all going to hell. But, I mean, he emerges in 2018 as an expert on Xinjiang matters, and it's through him that you hear all these allegations. He's the one who puts out this, there's a million Uyghurs in concentration camps. How he did this, he interviewed 8 people, and based on those 8 people, he extrapolated and decided there was a million. He decided that he was also the source that said that Xinjiang women were being, reproductive rights were being terminated forcefully against their will. He also was the one who said that Xinjiang cotton was being harvested by, this million person group of people he said were in detention. So, and it's been unsurprisingly, just prior to Michelle Bachelet's visit, he says he has a treasure trove of documents and pictures showing that there are active abuses going on in Xinjiang. It's strange in terms of the timing. It's also strange that he's employed by the Jamestown Foundation, which was founded by the CIA to help Soviet emigres find a voice and a job in the United States. So, you know,
I just want to interrupt you there because without having Mr. Zenz on the program to defend himself, I should just add that he has said that there is a propaganda smear campaign against him and his research. But as I said, when we don't have him on the program here to defend himself, there has, of course, been a lot of other research done beyond what Mr. Zenz has started and which has been built upon that. I want to come back to you.
Can you name that, Kim? Can you specify that?
Well, why don't we cross back?
Please tell me where it's coming from.
Sure. Why don't we cross back over?
Yes. Why don't we go back to Human Rights Watch?
Yeah, let's go back to Human Rights Watch. Sophie Richardson, if you can tell us a little bit more about the irrefutable evidence.
Well, we can go on for quite some time about the thousands of Uyghurs we have interviewed over the last 25 years, and particularly the hundreds, including camp survivors, in the recent past. I find some of these comments a little bit bizarre at best. I also want to point out on the topic of re-education camps, thinking especially of people like Dr. Gulshan Abbas or the very well-known Uyghur economist Ilham Tohti, who is a scholar. I don't think that doctors and lawyers need re-education. Let's be very clear about what we have documented based on victim and survivor testimony has happened in these camps: torture, denial of food and medical treatment, sexual violence, forced study of Xi Jinping thought and renunciation of faith and culture, persecution for using the Uyghur language, forcing older people to study Mandarin and not use Uyghur. So let's take the gloss off this term re-education. This is torture, and these are crimes against humanity. Mm. And we have documented it directly from the people who actually have experienced it. There is irrefutable evidence. And I think maybe we can point particularly in this discussion to the number of Chinese government documents that have leaked over the last several years, showing, among other things, the intent to arbitrarily detain people in large scale, and particularly with a view towards essentially eradicating Uyghurs and other Turkic communities' distinct identities. Mm. These are crimes against humanity, and they require a serious response, as we see in other parts of the world.
All right. Thank you for that, Ms. Richardson. I want to cross over to Roshan Abbas, because the purpose of this program we want to get onto is talking about the UN's efforts in China. The UN Human Rights Commissioner's trip to China. Roshan Abbas, what are your thoughts on Michelle Bachelet's going to China? Was it a mistake, as the U.S. contends?
It is a mistake, and we have been asking her to meet with us as the victims' families and meet with the former inmates who were in the camps before, but she refused meeting with us. And with her statement yesterday at the press conference, it's, you know, what she said is appalling. And as a sister of a victim, innocent victim being detained, I am offended. We are hurt as the Uyghurs beyond the disappointment. What Bachelet did is an abandonment of her obligation. It's an insult to the camp victims and millions of innocent Uyghurs who are missing and the suffering and the being sent to modern slavery. And also, it's a betrayal of the founding principles of the United Nations and the values that she is commanded with upholding. So, and it's a perfect example of the United Nations and her office and Michelle Bachelet voluntarily giving up the rights to defend freedom and democracy. So we are calling for her resignation immediately.
Okay.
She mimicked CCP's talking points like anti-terrorism, and her narrative basically legitimized the genocide perpetrated against the Uyghurs. Mm-hmm. And her so-called prison visit is a Potemkin-style sham. And there is overwhelming proof of what's happening, as Sophie just said, with eyewitness testimonies and the former victims. And also document after document of the Chinese government's own leaked data. And it's showing the PCR's intent, People's Republic of China's intent for the genocide. And her comments yesterday seem custom made with the People's Republic of China's propaganda machine.
Okay. I'd like to cross over back to Anna Tangen just to talk a little bit more about Michelle Bachelet's visit. How do you think China will be viewing this visit? Is this a success for them?
Well, I don't know that it's a success. I mean, basically, they avoided the lynching that was being referred to by Roshan. Yes, I mean, that's always good. I mean, there is a lot of anecdotal testimony by people who are seeking asylum in other countries. They can't exactly say that, you know, life in back home was wonderful. They want to put the best gloss on it they can as they're looking to go somewhere else. So what you have here is she's, the premise is that she's somehow in league with the Chinese government. I don't think anybody who knows her or as a head of state who's seen her in action would believe that. But, you know, this is an example of, you know, somebody who's trying to start a dialogue, and then you have these fringe groups on the side demanding that she condemn and just wholeheartedly endorse their particular views.
Sophie Richardson, Michelle Bachelet's attitude seems to be that any interaction with the Chinese government is better than no interaction, and that might pave the way for discussions around human rights policies. What's your take on that? Do you think there's any reasoning there?
Well, look, for a long time, the reasoning has been, you know, not just with the Chinese government, but with others, that there has to be some degree of engagement in order to push for any sorts of improvements. You know, and in the pure abstract, the idea of establishing working groups or dialogues would be fine if, there's a two-part answer here, if 25 years of those kinds of exercises between various governments, UN agencies, and others with the Chinese government in order to try to improve human rights had actually yielded results. They didn't. What they did was gave the Chinese government a very easy diplomatic box to check that assured those authorities that they would not be held accountable for human rights violations. And I think that's part of what has, at least as a political matter, paved the way for the thinking that we can see in those leaked government documents, mm-hmm. that the Chinese government commit atrocity crimes and expect to get away with it. So to have those kinds of conversations now and for those to be the outcomes, the sole outcomes of this visit, without also, the important component of an actual investigation based on ample evidence of some of the most serious human rights crimes committed by Chinese authorities against Uyghurs and others across the country would be an enormous mistake. This is precisely the formula that the very Chinese officials who are responsible for crimes against humanity want. They want to not be held accountable. And that is what Bachelet cannot be allowed to let happen.
Okay. Roshan Abbas, for those left behind, for those Uyghurs who are still in Xinjiang, what is life like there now? How much surveillance is there, or how are people feeling?
The Chinese government basically criminalized Islam, and it's used as a weapon against the innocent people. They are being treated not just as a secondary citizens, and they have absolutely no any kind of basic survival rights, but they are facing active full-speed genocide. We just had thousands of pictures, documents of Chinese government's own data showing how ridiculous China's faulty claims when they are saying that those are so-called training centers and for the national security issues. There are faces after faces of young children, like 14, 15 years old teenagers, 73 years old grandma, 60 some years old, 70 some years old people. What kind of national threat? Somebody like that, old grandmas, grandpas brought to a country like China. So basically, what the Uyghur people are living is about survival. They are fighting for survival. And what Bachelet did is legitimizing the Chinese government's genocide, and it's going to make Uyghurs' life hell there. What she did is the same as going to Nazi Germany during the early 40s and repeating what Hitler was saying about the Jewish people in Europe. So she should be ashamed of herself and resign immediately if she has a little bit of humanity left in her heart.
Einar Tangen, what do you make of the international response to China and to these allegations of what's happening in Xinjiang?
Well, the international response has been mostly on the U.S. side, which is decided. Obviously, Roshan and her groups are saying this. They're joined in the chorus by Human Rights Watch. But, you know, it's a little bit of a stretch. You have to believe that China is an uncaring country that doesn't do anything for its people, when it's, in fact, one of the few nations who has done something about poverty, has provided upward mobility, has provided resources, social services to its people. One of the greatest economic stories out there. So this beating the drum that somehow Chinese people are repressed and unhappy, they might be under COVID restrictions right now, but you know the fact is that that's not true. And I think anyone who comes there, I have been in Xinjiang last summer. I did not see people crying and being repressed. I made it a point of getting out and going off on my own so that I was not being monitored, so that I could see the situation. I saw none of it. In fact, in Kashgar, I couldn't find any police, although there are many more cameras than there were before. I was there in 2015, and the hotel where I stayed was bombed about less than a week after I left. At that time, there were armed guards, there were checkpoints, there were armored vehicles, people with machine guns. But none of that was there when I went back last summer. And quite frankly, the people had changed. They've been much more middle class, and much more concerned about getting their kids into college. I visited a maternity hospital. I wanted to see what was going on there. And I can tell you that no one was telling them to not have babies. We met with families. We weren't introduced to them. We literally went up to them and just said, hey, can we talk to you? And it's very clear to me, at least on an anecdotal basis, that there is no repression going on there.
But I know that sort of ability to operate independently has been very difficult for international observers or would-be researchers. We're going to have to leave it there for time. Thank you very much for your time, Roshan Abbas, Einar Tangen, and Sophie Richardson. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. So that's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Kim Vanell, and the whole team here in Doha, bye-bye for now.